Hey, we're still here with George Mason University. Today we're talking with Dr. David Dom, an assistant professor at San Jose State University in California. We're going to be discussing his recent paper titled Toward Quality Online Physical Education, Research Questions and Future Directions. You can find the full site of the article in the notes section, and we'll link to that as well. David, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Russo. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to discuss this article with you. I'd first like to thank and acknowledge the hard work of my co-authors, Tyler Goad, Ryan Mosier, and Chad Killian. Just want to say that this paper came about after a conversation that Brian and I had at the 2018 PEAK conference in Salt Lake City. And that conversation was really about, you know, how research related to online physical education really needed to move beyond kind of the research that we had done, just finding out about what is online physical education in the K-12 area. And we really hope that this manuscript is a step in that direction.
Yeah. And rest in peace, Salt Lake City Pete Heat Conference. That's a yeah. bummer that is not coming around every 3 years anymore, but we'll cry about that later. But just as a plug here, for those of you going to Shape America in 2022, there is traditionally like the day before a Pete Heat kind of smaller one-day conference that they are organizing. So a public service announcement to start. So
yeah, looking forward to that.
So let me ask you this. Before this COVID-19 pandemic hit and like really shook up this online learning world that we are now embedded in, what was the status of online PE in the U.S.?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I've been asked that a couple times over the last year plus now, but you know, online physical education pre-COVID, and I just want to kind of note that online PE pre-COVID and what was experienced during the pandemic are like they're completely different things, right? Apples and oranges. When we look at, you know, online programs that were designed as online programs for online students taught by online teachers, right, people who chose that mode of education, versus what was experienced during the pandemic, which was, you know, everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Which was just absolutely nuts in terms of just the volume of students that online education or some variation of online education or distance learning was serving. But we're certainly seeing, I think, another evolution of online learning as we enter into this new school year, and the ways that school districts are approaching online physical education or just online education in general. But I just want to kind of take a step back and say just online education in general for all subject areas has shown tremendous growth since the early 2000s, even the 90s, you know, kind of the advent of the internet, and the growth of just, you know, digital learning. You know, we've seen a lot of growth in online education in general. I know you've seen at the university level, just as I have too, right, with the growth of online programs. Yeah. But measuring enrollment in online education is complicated due to just the many ways that K-12 students enroll in online courses. And we know that pre-COVID, there were over 1 million K-12 students who were enrolled as full-time online students, but they made up no more than 4% of any state's K-12 student population. So full-time online students was still a relatively, you know, small percentage overall.
Right, and these are students that never come on campus, right?
Correct, it's just, yeah.
They're in front of a computer, they get everything online.
Yeah, and these could be potentially homeschool students, they could be students with injuries that maybe prevent them from coming to campus. It could be by choice, because every state has different policies when it comes to online education. But the number of 1 million is very deceiving because it only really accounts for the full-time online students. And again, we don't necessarily know what subject areas they're taking. We assume the full-time students are taking the full breadth, including physical education, but I don't know that we can make that assumption just off the cuff. And you know, looking at the estimates of who are taking online courses part-time, The estimates out there are wide ranging, but if just taking an educated guess pre-COVID, I would say that it'd probably be in the tens of millions of K-12 students were enrolled part-time or taking one-off courses or something like that pre-COVID.
Right.
So there was a series of reports done, or there is a series of reports done by what was the Evergreen Research Group and now is the Digital Learning Collaborative, and they review K-12 online blended and digital learning, and they do a state-by-state snapshot, much like the Shape of the Nation report that Shape America puts out regarding PE policies. And in these reports, they acknowledge the difficulty of measuring part-time K-12 students just due to all the ways that schools offer online learning and the ways that students enroll in these courses, including, you know, school and district level courses to enrollment through private companies that offer online learning experiences for K-12 students, and even courses that K-12 students take at colleges and university for their graduation credit. So right. Just trying to count the number of people that do this is extremely complicated. And so to say that the online learning world is complicated is a little bit of an understatement. And just to get an accurate count would be impossible.
Right.
And then to add to this complication, we have states such as Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Michigan, and Virginia that have state laws that say that in order to graduate high school, students have to take a online course. And then we have virtual school days, which is a relatively new phenomenon, mainly in the Midwest. And East Coast, they were really virtual school days were around providing schools some flexibility, either around scheduling, potentially maybe budget related. So where students maybe had a specific day every week, say virtual learning day Friday, right, where everybody was learning from home, or they were using it as makeup days when inclement weather was an issue, and instead of canceling the school day, they were able to use these virtual school days, so they weren't having to make up those days later.
Yeah. And that's been a conversation here. What during snow days that those no longer exist. Like they're just going to do this online virtual day. I've heard that, and I have heard of school districts going down to 4 days a week, which I guess, you know, it's very controversial, but this makes sense if you think about all of the school buses, all of the transport, all of the school meals, and all of those things that need to happen to run a school on a fifth day in a place that's really tight on money. It makes sense. Obviously, then there's the access part, right? So, like, who's not getting free and reduced lunch at school on those days? How do you transport that food to people? So I haven't actually heard about this virtual learning day Friday before, like having a full day virtually at school districts. So that's interesting.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting to learn more about it. And I really don't know a ton about virtual school days. I think it's a whole nother conversation, right? In terms of how are we preparing teachers, right? Mm-hmm. You know, for you and I talking about the teacher preparation side of the house, right? What does it mean for us, you know, if that becomes more of a nationwide movement? You know, how are we as teacher educators, and or how is the induction process for new teachers as they enter the workforce? How are we preparing teachers with these skills that they're going to need to potentially be teaching online?
Right.
But I think another outcome is just, you know, what's going to be interesting to see, and maybe these upcoming digital learning collaborative snapshots, is how the pandemic may have impacted some of these state policies regarding online learning. Because I know for some people I've talked to, and we see news stories and things like that, you know, the pandemic has left kind of a sour taste in people's mouths regarding online learning. And we're seeing news articles around, you know, the gap in equity, and we're seeing learning gaps. But at the same time, for some students and some parents, they've learned that online learning has the benefit, right? The flexibility that online learning provides, the being able to work from home for the last 18 months, right? It's a weird thing kind of being back in my office, but certainly there's a flexibility that I think a lot of people learn to appreciate. But again, it's not for everybody, right? And I'll kind of front load this. Online learning is absolutely not designed for everybody. It was never meant to be for everybody. So we do kind of have to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
So I guess back to your question about what was the status of PE, right? Because I kind of went on this long tangent around just online learning in general. But what was the status of online PE pre-COVID? We didn't really know much about enrollment in specific subject areas in the online world until fairly recently, in one of those snapshot digital learning collaborative documents. But what we do know is that it has grown, just like in online education in general. In those snapshots, they started doing some subject area specific enrollment about 3 years ago, 4 years ago now. So in the academic year 2016-17, approximately 8% of the online course completions was in the health and fitness area, which was up from 3.5% just two academic years earlier. Mm-hmm. So certainly it is growing, but part of that is just capturing more data. So we don't necessarily know what, but the other part is it captures health and physical education. And I think this also speaks to what are or what were online physical education courses pre-COVID, and they were largely fitness-based. And when you look at the course titles, health and fitness really does fit the bill as opposed to physical education.
Right.
Because I'm aware of very few online pre-COVID PE courses that were focused on more than just fitness.
Right. Absolutely. So how many states allow online PE? Do you know that number? And is that number going up?
So when we look at the last Shape of the Nation report, they identified 31 states that had policies allowing required physical education credits to be earned online. And that number certainly has grown since the first time the Shape of the Nation report mentioned online physical education in 2006. But at the same time, I'm also going to say that just because the state doesn't have a policy, it doesn't mean that online PE does not exist in that state. My first study as a master's student in 2007-2008 found that there were online PE programs in states that didn't have policies related to online PE. So it was certainly happening outside of where there are policy. So I think it's safe to say that online learning pre-COVID existed in all 50 states. But what we can't say as definitively is if online physical education existed as an option in all 50 states, though I would err on the side of probably saying it probably did. Okay. I think there's a pretty good chance that in some way, shape, or form, online PE existed in some way, pre-COVID times.
Yeah. So, and I know you talked a little bit about your research here, our master's students in our online master's learning program. Read your article with Craig Bushner about online PE. So as a person who, there aren't a ton of people, or let's say 2 years ago, there weren't a ton of people doing research on online PE, and you are one of those scholars in this area. So can you talk to me about what the research on this topic is, on online PE in K-12 settings is like?
Yeah, so you're right. It's a small research community pre-COVID. And I hesitate to say, the research that's being done now around the COVID experience is directly, it's online PE kind of, right?
It's online PE during a pandemic.
During a pandemic,
nobody that's been trained to teach online, they were just told March
13th, it wasn't a choice.
2020, hey, you're now an online educator, and so figure it out.
Right, exactly. Right, thrown in the deep end of the pool and expected to swim. Mm-hmm. Right. So, certainly, I think we have to put an asterisk next to what can we truly learn about the. Sure, we can learn something, but we always are going to have that asterisk next to the fact that this was done during a pandemic and it wasn't a choice. But yeah, it's a small research community. The funny thing is, we were writing this article, the four of us, and we just found ourselves citing our own studies time after time after time. And there's a couple other folks, but there was a lot of self-citation. But that was the reason for that is there really hasn't been much done beyond what we've done, little pieces here and there. But and again, that kind of was the conversation of, we need to move this line, this research line, forward into answering maybe some of the more, pressing questions around how we can, get this into a more mature research line, and actually guide practice, right? And guide policy, and actually, do more than just, again, just find out what's happening. But, as I alluded to earlier, it's complicated doing research in this area. I'm not gonna lie, it's frustrating, and it can be very hard to do research, just because of access issues, right? Just getting a foot in the door to talk with people who work in this area. For example, a lot of places use private online learning companies that sell their course shells to districts. Which anecdotally, I'm going to say, when I talk to teachers who teach online and use these for-profit course shells, they don't have very many nice things to say about it. But so I will say that I haven't had any success engaging with these private companies to do research. They have no motivation or no reason to let researchers in. So certainly access is an issue.
Right, because they will probably showcase that they're not doing things really well. But I guess that's the problem, is we talk about outsourcing. There's Lee Sperka does research on this. There's a couple people in New Zealand, Australia that do research on the outsourcing of this. And you think about private online companies that are just saying, hey, this is just a plug and play. Just pay us this. How much are we selling ourselves out of a job in K-12 settings? When somebody gives you all of the curriculum, you just plug and play and go through. You have very minimal control of what's going on. I think it's a very slippery slope there.
It's scary, right? It speaks to the power of advocacy as well at the local level, right? Because that's where the decisions for those types of things are made. And it takes just even awareness that it's happening. I'm not even sure that educators even in districts where it is happening, even know it's happening. So certainly I think there's an awareness issue, but yeah, I mean the advocacy of developing these courses yourselves, or having some level of control, right? Because you just identified it, is if it's a plug and play and you don't have, and that's the criticism that I've heard anecdotally, is I literally am an online manager. I'm not a teacher anymore. There's not a lot of room for adaptation. There's not a lot of room for extending learning activities, or just even the way that I give feedback, right? It's very much plug and play. So, from the advocacy side, we definitely need potentially resources out there for educators to be able to have those conversations with their school districts and their schools, or at whatever level it's happening, to say, here's what we would like to see. And, is there going to be some level of review? Can we provide feedback? What is it? What is the process around adopting these online programs? So certainly that's an area that needs support. But even with publicly funded state online schools or public schools, access has been tough. Because again, it's just kind of, what are you going to do for me, right? Are you going to spin this in a positive light? And as an objective researcher, you can't make those promises ahead of time. But I will say that the best success that those of us that have done research in this area has been either through personal connection, just connections at conferences. I've met several physical education coordinators, who for large school districts who have online programs, and that's proven to be, just professionally having those, just even having the conversation of what this is, has been beneficial. But at the same time, even with all the complexities of online learning and the barriers that we've run into, it's been an extremely fascinating area to do scholarship. Now it's been what, almost 14 years for me that I started this process. But the rapid growth and just the lack of scholarship to guide best practices, again, it's just kind of driven, for me at least, this fascination with it. But I'm also going to say that the lack of research is what got me hooked onto research as a master's student and led me into a career in academia. I never thought that I'd be here, right? As a professor, teaching at a university, that was never in the career path for me, right? But it was the research that actually got me hooked into it. But on a professional level, this research has always been good conversation at conferences when I present this topic. It's always, like I said, inevitably one of the conversation is, do you support this? Or people assume that, oh, because you're presenting on this, you're pro online physical education. Well, what I'll say is, I'm pro quality physical education. If it happens to be online, then yeah, I mean, I would rather, I have a kid just started kindergarten. I would rather him enroll in a quality online physical education course than a bad face-to-face physical education course. If he's going to get quality learning outcomes, that's what I want for him, right? But lastly, just kind of on this topic, I'm just going to say that, again, I just, online physical education, the research related to it just needs to evolve into more than just what's just happening or even the challenges and benefits. We kind of know that, and it's not just in the online physical education literature, it's other subject areas as well. But we need research that informs practice and raises the bar for the research done in this area, and which is, again, one of the reasons why we wrote this article, and in the hopes that we're guiding the research to try to answer some of these more meaningful questions related to online physical education.
Yeah, and I've definitely gone back and forth with this. As soon as the first time I learned about online PE, I was 100% against it without learning anything about it. And I was like, no, it can't be possibly, like, it can't possibly be good. And then I saw one of my undergraduate students who got a teaching gig right out of his teaching credential, and he showed me what he was teaching online. And it's way more in depth cognitively than anything that I've seen done in, not anything, but most high school PE courses did not go that much into depth. And so I think that there are benefits for sure in doing that. And I think,
Yeah,
it's a
the fear of the
complicated to
unknown, right?
say I'm pro this because it's like, well, I'm not pro bad plug and plays, in online PE, but if it's done better, if it's done for a student who would not be physically active and would not do anything, would not engage in person, if they can engage 100% online, then I mean there's an argument to be made there.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that to me, that I think that's got to be one of the questions we dig deeper into. It's not really addressed in this article, but to me, it's a fascinating question, is why are students choosing to take this course online? And I think there are potential application to the face-to-face environment, right? Is it because of bullying? Is it because of curricular choices, right? What is it? What's driving potentially students towards this online mode versus taking it face to face? And then what are the implications for the profession about that? So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It's kind of a fascinating thing, but you're right. Yeah, that knee-jerk reaction of online, nope,
Yeah,
right?
it can't
I'm
possibly
already
be good.
against it. I don't want it. It can't possibly good, right? Because it's an oxymoron in our profession, right? It's what we do is physical. How in the world can we do this online? And certainly, I think that barrier, just that cognitive barrier for ourselves, right, as we're trying to figure out what is online physical education, we're trying to rationalize it, right? What is it? And we're trying to draw a picture in our head of what does this actually look like.
So we've talked about where we've been and what this kind of may have looked like during the pandemic, but where do you see this movement of online PE going post-pandemic? Like, are there any like predictions that you're willing to put on the record?
God, man, if I had a crystal ball, I really wish I knew kind of where we were heading. I think this post, when we as I don't know if we're not post COVID, but as we enter into post-COVID, it's going to be fascinating to see, you know, is there going to be this repulsion of online learning because of what, you know, happened during the pandemic for a lot of students, just the lack of, you know, learning, and certainly there were a lot of bad things happening out there, but certainly there was some good stuff happening out there. But I do think that we're seeing schools investing in online learning because of the pandemic, right? There was a lot of monies thrown from the federal government, state governments into digital technologies and, you know, trying to overcome the access issue and the access barriers. But, you know, we really don't know what's happening. But from what I'm seeing in the local level, you know, my son's school district has their own virtual school students, a virtual school for students who are opting out of face-to-face schooling due to the pandemic. And kind of interesting is one of my newly graduated teacher candidates interviewed for that hybrid face-to-face and online PE teaching position to serve that online school. So it wasn't a full-time online PE teaching position, at least not in that school district. And actually last night I completed a reference check for another recent graduate for a fully online PE position in the kind of central part of California.
Yeah. And honestly, like I think if we look at this, we have to understand that there are teachers who would prefer to teach online. Like they would prefer to hike in Zion National Park during the day and check their like email and live like in different parts of the state and travel and be a nomad, or they just don't like driving an hour and a half one way to work, but they can get the same salary teaching online and they prefer that. And there are students who are going to want to do this even out of the pandemic. I know that some school districts are banning it. They're like, they are not allowed to do online academies, and other school districts are looking at it and going, well, if there's teachers who want to teach online and there's students who want to learn online, let's do it. So yeah. I think that there's going to be a generation of students, maybe they're younger, maybe they're older, maybe they saw something during the pandemic that they're like, hey, I don't mind working from home. Like, I'm good at this. I'm good at educating online, and they might enjoy it more.
Yeah, that's kind of the interesting part is, right, what's going to happen post-pandemic. I think at least in the short term, we're going to see an increase in online course offerings. In the long term, you know, we don't know, but we also know, like you just mentioned it, right, some schools and districts have policies against online learning, right, and we're seeing that kind of play out in different states across the country where online education has kind of come into the crosshairs of politicians and it's become a political issue. And we're seeing some states pass anti-online education policies. But at the end of the day, you know, online PE is here to stay, and it will likely continue to grow. But, you know, again, some form of distance learning has been around for well over 100 years, right? Think about courses by mail, VHS courses, phone courses, to now what are internet-based courses. So there's always going to be a need of some form of distance learning. And online physical education, I think, is just, it's an embedded part of that experience. So whether it grows or goes back to that, you know, no more than 4% of any state's, you know, K-12 population, or if it becomes 10%, you know, I can't imagine it's ever going to be the plurality. I don't think it's ever going to be the predominant form of education. But yeah, because of that, as you identified, right, that benefit of teaching from home or learning from home, or, you know, being able to kind of work non-traditional hours, right, go hiking in the morning and manage the online course stuff later or whatever, right, just that flexibility. I think a lot of teachers, like, you know what, I actually kind of like this. I didn't think I would, but you know what? You know, it's not that bad.
Yeah. And I mean, and things could shift dramatically. Like we talked probably 10 years ago when we saw Harvard come out with these MOOCs, these massive online open classes, and you could take a Harvard class and learn all of this stuff for free or whatever the, maybe there's a small cost associated with it. But you look at that, nobody talks about MOOCs very much anymore because we started realizing that you can't do a self-paced course as effectively as somebody who's giving you feedback, and you're not just a person in a huge room listening to a lecture. And that type of education works for some people, but there's less motivation there. So that has kind of faded away, but it works in certain areas. So I think you're right. I think it's going to be really interesting, to see what kind of fades away and what comes up. And I hope it's the quality that comes up to the top. So you, in the paper, you frame it with the essential components of PE from Shape America. So they talk about four pillars. One is policy and environment. The other is curriculum, then you have appropriate instruction, and then student assessment. So when we're looking at future research in online PE, what are some of the topics we need to look at in the first pillar of policy and environment?
Yeah, so when you look at this pillar, it covers policies that are related to things like instructional minutes, policies around inclusion, waivers, substitutions, exemption, class size, using physical activity as punishment, and having a licensed teacher to teach the subject area. And when we look at the scholarship, thankfully, we know that online PE is being taught by licensed educators. I think that was a big sigh of relief when we started doing this research. Like, thank goodness, right? That it's being taught by licensed physical education. I think actually one of the interesting things is that we found out that they were experienced physical educators. These were people that tended to have master's degrees that were had been teaching for, more than 20 years or more than 15 years, right? These were established educators for the most part who were choosing this mode. I remember talking to one person. She's like, my school district asked me to develop it, and I said yes, but I'd only, and the reason I started teaching it because I owned it, right? It was mine, and it was my baby. I developed it, right? I wanted to do it. But future research should always continue, I think, asking that question. If for no other reason than just to ensure that the course is being taught by a competent expert, right? Someone who's licensed in that subject area. I think we always need to ask that question. So from a policy standpoint, we need to absolutely make sure that there's always policies that licensed educators, are doing the teaching. When we look at instructional minutes, we felt it was important that future research distinguish between learning time in the different domains, or at least try to examine that, right? How is learning being spent within the different domains of learning within physical education, and how the instruction accomplishes the state-required content standards, essentially meshing, how does this course meet the state-required content? Right. And we really don't have in the existing literature, we don't have a clear snapshot of that, of what, but earlier we were talking about how existing courses are largely fitness-based. And just on the surface, I don't know how a fitness-based course, might be marketed as meeting all the content standards, but again, just on the surface, it can't be accurate because that PE is way more than just fitness. So really examining how courses are they wiggling through loopholes? What is it that we need to know about these courses and how they mesh with the content standards? And what can we do from a policy perspective to ensure that these online courses are not just kind of a free-for-all to just do fitness, or it needs to be a well, part of the well-rounded education and make sure that we're addressing, the content that is much greater than fitness. We also suggest about guide, doing research that guides the legislative and school district policies by examining what's happening within online programs, but also providing solutions for what should be happening. For example, ensuring students' success with online education, right? I think what we saw during the pandemic is just throwing people online courses didn't amount to success. And there's a lot of reasons why students weren't successful during the pandemic. But, you know, thinking about some of the things we do know from the research and just making sure that comes into policy, for example, how students enroll or how they choose to enroll within those online courses and what support structures do those online courses have in place? Are there screening mechanisms that provide students feedback on whether online learning is a good fit for them and maybe what resources they may need to be successful, right? If you're not a self-starter, online education is really difficult for you mm-hmm. because a lot of the work is on your own time and you need to not be a procrastinator like many of us are. And so are there policies that you know, kind of gear towards this meeting the needs of all the learners? And I think screening is an important part of it because, again, online education is not for everybody, but you don't necessarily know it's for you unless you've had that conversation, right? So whether that's through counselors at the school level, or there's some nice validated tools out there on predicting success, mm-hmm. Whether you're going to be a successful student in online learning. So I think those things need to be part of the policies of online programs, and I think research needs to help guide those decisions that are being made. But yeah, ultimately there's a lot of questions around policy and environment that will guide online physical education, and we hope that again when folks read this article, they'll be able to come up with their own questions and use what we put together as a launching pad for trying to guide those local and state level policies that relate to online learning.
Right. So the second pillar that they talk about is curriculum, and that focuses on what is being taught. Can you speak to that that point?
Yeah. So this pillar of curriculum is talking about whether the curriculum is comprehensive, whether it's based on standards, and whether the curriculum goes under periodic review. And so from the research that has been done, we really don't have a ton of information that can answer these overarching themes. But as mentioned before, the curriculum is or has been largely fitness-based and focused on the cognitive domain, which for many PE teachers during the pandemic, they can relate to this because that's what we were seeing during the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. That it was largely fitness-based. It was largely focused on the cognitive domain, especially early on in the pandemic. I do think there was a shift mid-pandemic as teachers were kind of getting their feet under them. but, that's, again, everybody was a little bit different in how they approached the curriculum. But online physical education research should examine the curriculum and what is being taught, but through the lens of finding or developing curricular exemplars or curricular models that addresses all learning outcomes. I think fitness was the path of least resistance. So I think we need research that guides those, the what can be taught, in the online environment. Related to this, we also need to understand how quality is being ensured in online physical education courses. Online PE programs should right now, I think, you can use established online learning evaluation tools such as Quality Matters, which you are probably aware of, or we need to do research on our own quality tools, right? How to evaluate physical education. What is quality online physical education? What does that look like? And to grow beyond online fitness courses, we need to understand what is being taught in online PE, and even if the current content standards are even achievable in the online environment.
Right.
And if they're not, I think that's another conversation of, well, how do we or should the content standards be updated or modified or revise to meet the needs of the online environment if it becomes very prevalent right. within a state.
Well, I mean, even if I think teachers who taught physical education during the pandemic would agree to this, that when you look at some of those content standards to talk about dribbling a basketball or dribbling a soccer ball or throwing, catching, or using a long-handed or short-handled implement, like all of those things are very hard to do when the student at home doesn't have the equipment. So
Yes, right.
I would be,
Bumping a rolled up sweater, right?
yeah, and it's like,
I
well,
saw that
like use your finger pads. You're like, ah, it's not bouncing back. like,
Yeah.
and I mean, I guess that's the same conversation of any state or any country that has standards towards aquatics or swimming, but they don't have a swimming pool access. And there are teachers in California, I remember this, that they go into a swimming unit and they just teach swimming in the gym, or like, well, this is how you would swim. These are all the safety things. And you're like, we're not going to the pool. You're like, well, we don't have a pool, so, but we're hitting this standard. So I think you're right in the sense of the quality of what is going to be taught. I think there are certain things that I don't know. Like, it would be very expensive to teach correctly because you'd have to figure out how to get that equipment to every single person.
Yeah, right. I mean, I know early on in the pandemic, I saw the PE packs, right, from I think Gopher, right? They had those that you could purchase. But again, right, how realistic is that, right? Schools don't have money for that.
Not for schools that are saying, hey, we need to go down to 4 days a week because we don't have money to run the buses 5 days a week.
Right.
They're not going out to Gopher and buying $200 packs for every single student from in their school. So, yeah. So let's talk about the third pillar, which is appropriate instruction. And appropriate instruction examines how PE is delivered. And clearly, online PE is delivered differently than in person. And we can also talk about how COVID PE that you talked about has been done very differently. In person, hybrid, concurrent, fully online. What should we be focusing on going forward in this area?
Yeah, I'm absolutely right. Online PE is absolutely delivered differently than face to face. And many of us have tried to teach parts of our courses or tried to teach the same content that we had taught face to face. We tried to teach that online, but I don't know about you, but I know I failed miserably at times as I was trying to translate what I had done in the classroom face to face to online. Certainly there was that struggle, right? Because online education is absolutely differently, and we can't treat them as the same in many ways. So this pillar covers how instruction addresses the goals and objectives of PE. I'm using various engagement strategies, being active and moderate to vigorous physical activity for at least 50% of the class time, and adapting instruction for students with special needs. And generally, we know that online experiences are fairly dichotomous, right? You either loved it or you hated it. And there's not a lot of middle ground in people's experiences, either taking courses or even teaching them. And obviously, their experiences are going to be influenced by the educator, which, of course, researchers, we don't have control over what educators do at the local level. But research can investigate best practices. And we can look at, like I mentioned earlier, curricular models or just, strategies to teach the content well, right? What do we know about teaching? And actually, I think this is where COVID was a huge boom, in just advancing what we know and the tools that are out there to be able to do our content online, right? It was huge just having, going from maybe a couple hundred teachers around the country to, tens of thousands of teachers now doing online. So COVID advanced what we knew about being able to teach physical education online by leaps and bounds. So that was fascinating from just my lens of looking at what we knew pre-COVID to kind of what was the experience during COVID and how do we address the content area. But we need to address, I think we need to continue to address strategies of how to efficiently address the psychomotor domain. I think beyond fitness, it becomes difficult, right? How do we do the rest of what we do beyond fitness and some of the cognitive learning stuff, right? We need to understand the various digital tools that teachers and students use to advance learning outcomes, right? We need to understand how to teach, basic locomotor skills online. To if we're talking about kindergarten to six, right, those fundamental movement skills, right? That the process of giving in the moment feedback, which I know we're going to talk about here in the next pillar when we talk about assessment, but right, just the how to deliver this content is certainly going to be something that future research needs to address.
Yeah, and I mean, even if you look at a teacher teaching a class of, 25 kindergartners, watching them all skip at the same time, it's very easy to see the one person, two people, whatever, five kids that aren't doing it correctly, and you can give that feedback. Mm-hmm. Versus you think about, and we'll talk to this in assessment, of watching 25 students' individual videos that they upload and then writing feedback individually to them. I mean, that's one way to do it. I know that there are probably other ways to do it, but the appropriate instruction and the feedback that you're able to give and the way that you can set up a lesson, I think it makes it very, very difficult. So,
yeah, well, I mean, just even be able to meet, it's in the pillar, it says, the guideline is 50% of the time spent in MBPA. I mean, does that make sense in an online environment?
Right.
At all? Because of the way the online courses are structured, right? They are different.
Yeah.
And it is a lot easier to do that cognitive content online. And as you identify it, it's so much harder to navigate the physical component online and be able to provide quality feedback in real time, as you have, 25, 50, 60, whatever little boxes of students on your screen.
Yeah.
But pre-COVID, live sessions really weren't happening in the online physical education world. Mm-hmm. That's really a COVID thing that happened, right?
Yeah,
pre-COVID,
right.
It was all asynchronous,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Online courses and PE were asynchronous. So that experience is COVID specific, right?
Yeah.
And I think an interesting question going to the future is what did the establishment of online physical education, what did they learn about teaching online from the COVID experience, and what are they going to be applying to future fully online, established online physical education courses? I think that's a question, I definitely, that's on my short list of things I want to do like now, right, of research projects. So,
yeah, I'm fascinated. Don't steal that idea, anybody. Let David take
that was mine, yeah.
So the last pillar is assessment. What do we know about assessment in online PE, and what do we still need to figure out?
Yeah, just like all the pillars, right? We need to know more, right?
Mm-hmm.
The assessment really, the assessment pillar talks about how student assessment, and how grading is aligned with content standards and grade and with the grade level outcomes and. Previous research has found that fitness tracking, specifically activity logs, was the most common form of assessment. And I think we also saw that during the pandemic in some of the articles that I've seen, right? Activity logs, which is, again, kind of the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
It was the easiest thing to do, to say, hey, everybody, just fill up this activity log. I'll give you, 100 points or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly online PE courses need to grow beyond this form of assessment, or at least beyond the traditional activity log that is on your honor, right? Let's use technology to verify, physical activity levels, or, let's use, I like to call it like activity log plus, right? It's not just telling me what you did, but let's have a reflection component to it, a goal setting component to it, maybe some evidence of proof that you actually did these things.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly future research needs to develop valid and reliable assessment tools and strategies, even, right? Best practices around how to assess these content standards online, including the effectiveness of activity logs and activity tracking, beyond kind of, again, that traditional just on your honor activity log. Again, I think we need to get away from that completely. It's just, it's just not a good form of assessment. Interestingly, you look at some of the research, you talk to online physical educators who use that, and they're like, I honestly have no clue whether students did this or not. I cannot trust this assessment at all.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, if you can't trust the assessment, then why are we giving it, right? What's the point of the assessment if you are literally throwing it out?
Yeah.
But, online research needs to investigate how teachers use assessment to drive curricular decisions, just like we need to know that in the face-to-face environment, and how online PE teachers are using assessments with their students to guide appropriate teaching practices, such as goal setting and choice. But again, we need to know that in the face-to-face environment and how better to prepare students or teachers to do these things. And additionally, we need research to help us understand the effectiveness of teacher feedback. We were just talking about that and how that feedback is implemented, right? It's really hard, right? Again, you have 50 kids on a screen. They're not even all on one screen. You have to scroll over right on Zoom, yeah, right, to see that many students, right? How can you effectively provide feedback? And again, that in the moment feedback that they can use now, right? I can watch a video provide feedback, but that moment is past for that student,
yeah,
right? When are they actually going to use that feedback? Mm-hmm. So I think that's a piece from an assessment standpoint that kind of fascinates me is how the feedback loop works within the online environment. And what are some really good effective strategies and even tools that can help us do those things in a efficient manner, right? While we have potentially a couple hundred students that we're serving every day.
You think about having those students on that screen and you're scrolling across and you're trying to teach, but you're trying to look at the students at the same time. And right, some of the students have their cameras off. And you think about, like for me, when I go into a faculty meeting, I'm like, oh, do I want to keep my camera on right now? Do I not? Like, I get distracted by just like looking at people. Like, I'm not paying attention to what's happening in the meeting because I'm watching like other people and seeing who's there. And, I think that there's so many distractions in that way. And then, you have somebody wanting to talk and they're cutting out. And so somebody will announce, they're like, hey, can you turn your camera off? Because this person has a low internet speed and maybe this will help. And it's a mess, but.
Yeah, right. I didn't even talk about cameras off, but yeah, that's a whole nother thing, right? This is, but again, this Zoom experience that we had during COVID, pre-COVID, that didn't exist, right, in online PE courses. So, is that a fad that's gonna pass? Is that something that's gonna remain in the future in terms of live, synchronous online sessions? I think that's going to be a fascinating part. Again, I think that's where maybe COVID experiences maybe will shift some of the thinking of the traditional pre-COVID online experiences. And again, what are the implications again for teaching, teaching strategies, and teacher education? Right? If this is a tool that sticks to the future in terms of online physical education, then again, I think we need to figure out what does that feedback loop look like? What are the pedagogical strategies that teachers can employ to actually manage doing these things? Because right, it's really hard to teach the class and watch all of your students in their own environments, and you have students who are not sharing their camera. So yeah, it definitely creates an interesting dynamic.
So I have one final question for you, and we talked about this at the very beginning of the podcast, and that this is a little bit complicated. So do you see online PE as the future of physical education, or do you feel that it's going to be some part of physical education in the future?
Yes and no. again, like I said, mentioned earlier, yes, in that some form of online PE will always exist, right? I think distance learning in some way, shape, or form is always going to exist. But again, as I mentioned earlier, no, because I do not believe that online physical education will ever be the predominant form of education, or just online education in general. I don't think will ever be the predominant form, at least not in our lifetime. I think it's what we saw during the pandemic. Distance learning is absolutely not for everybody. Beyond the access and equity issues, right? Just from a learning standpoint, it just doesn't mesh well for everybody. I'm sure you experienced it in your classes. I know I did. I mean, there's just students who just dropped off the face of the earth, and no matter how much you reached out to them or they wanted to be there, they just physically could not stare at a screen or couldn't manage their own time, right? They needed that face-to-face. But I think it's also important for listeners of this podcast and the readers of this manuscript to acknowledge, again, that the educational experience during the pandemic is way different than educational experiences that were designed for online learning from the start, right? From start to finish, that the course was designed as an online course. That is a very different process than the pandemic pedagogies that were developed by educators with minimal training and understanding of online education as a whole. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that they didn't learn or that they didn't do good things, but when a course is designed by people who know what they're doing in the online world for students who want to be there, right, it's a very different thing than when it's for everybody. I think, again, it's going to be interesting to see how the pandemic pedagogies will inform future online physical education courses. I do believe that, the good of the pandemic from an online PE perspective is that, again, it advanced what we know about how to do this by leaps and bounds. And we learned this just because of the ingenuity and the creativity of the tens of thousands of physical educators that are out there, right? And I thank them all for doing a good job, right? And helping me, right, understand even online physical education and what it is and what it can be. I think to me, that was kind of a fascinating part. I thought I knew what online physical education was pre-COVID. Then COVID hit, and we just saw all these examples on Twitter and, the social media and just, even, through all the other digital resources that are out there and all the videos on YouTube and just the use of the different technology tools, right? It expanded my understanding of what online physical education could be post-COVID. So I think that was very fascinating from my end. And I'm just going to end by saying, this the research related to online physical education is a relatively new field, right? We're talking, at most 20 years old when you look at the earliest online PE related studies, and it needs to mature and grow. And my co-authors and I really hope that this manuscript and this podcast offer some guidance on the research to take the next steps in guiding this mode of education to ensure that quality education is taking place.
Yeah, and I think it's at a crossroads of, there's plenty of research questions, and you list a lot of them in here. There's plenty of room in the field for people to do good things. And there's also plenty of interest in people learning about this, whether they are thinking about moving one class to online or moving a summer class online so they can teach a summer physical education class, or going fully online, or figuring out what the heck just happened in the last 2 years of education and what they can take from that to balance out the rest of their teaching. So it was a great article, great read. I think it's spot on for this, whether you're at a university or whether you're at a K-12 school, of going into this new academic year and kind of reflecting on where we've been and kind of thinking about where we can go in online PE. So David, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate the information and sharing your work.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Krista, for having me.
Awesome. So for those of you who want to read the full article, there's a link in the notes section. You can just click on the hyperlink. It'll take you to the article. If you have trouble accessing it, you can let us know. And then that's all we got on this podcast, and we'll be back next week. Thanks. If you're still listening, you're probably really into health and physical education. So I'm going to use this opportunity to pitch our master's program to you if you don't have your master's degree yet. Our 100% online master's degree program we offer at George Mason is affordable. You can do it while teaching, and it's high quality. Mason was listed as one of the top 50 universities under 50 years old in the world. Our education department was ranked in the top 10 nationally for the online master's degree program in curriculum and instruction. The master's degree revolves around your teaching. So you'll use assignments from the classes to immediately apply research and best practices to your classes. You'll be part of a tight-knit cohort of health and physical education professionals who are passionate about teaching. You're also going to get an opportunity to interact with students in other content areas. So if you're interested, you can email me, look me up on Twitter, or you can go on the hpewebsite.com under Study With Us and watch a video that I've made.